Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. We are some 7 weeks out from the Thrilla in Philla. Now, this disclosure, that's not my name for the DNC. It's the title from the latest Political Junkie newsletter. And for that, let's go to the source. Joining me is Ken Rudin. Ken, thanks for being here on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
You've been at this a long time. For a political junkie, does the junk get any purer than this election cycle?
You know something, every 4 years we always say we've never seen anything like this, but that is so true in 2016. We've never seen a candidate like Donald Trump. Every time he crosses a line, every time he says something either offensive or incendiary or outrageous, we say, okay, this time he's gone too far. And it keeps happening and his numbers keep increasing. And then on the Democratic side, I mean, how rare is it for the battle to go on all the way to June? I mean, we saw that with Obama and Clinton in 2008, but it's rare. And of course, Bernie Sanders was always an asterisk, as he likes to tell you. He was always 2% in the polls when he got in the race. So both parties have surprised us completely this year.
It seems like decades ago that we were resigning ourselves to a Bush-Clinton race.
Right, exactly right. We were talking about the inherited nominations. When we came into this election, Jeb Bush had the endorsements, had over $1 million in the bank, had all the establishment support. And as we saw in the primaries, I mean, he just was not a good candidate. And whatever you think of Donald Trump, I mean, we went through 16 Republicans, and some of them were very strong, thought to be very strong, with strong resumes. And one by one, they all fell by the wayside. And the candidate that's still remaining is the one I think we all thought was going to be the joke of it all, the sideshow of it all. And he's certainly no joke.
Each day brings new surprises. Among the ones from today, Paul Ryan this morning said that Trump's assessment of the federal judge trying his case is a textbook definition of racism. Yet he's still backing Donald Trump for president. What kind of signal does that send to the swing voters who likely determine the result come November?
I'll tell you what it does for the Republican Party. They are tearing their hair over this because there are so many Republicans like Marco Rubio, like Paul Ryan, like many others who'd rather not have endorsed Donald Trump. But for Paul Ryan, maybe he's looking at 2020. Maybe he just wants a united Republican Party so they'll keep control of the House in 2016. But whatever it is, it was torturous to watch Paul Ryan try to explain that, yes, it was a racist comment that Donald Trump made about the judge, but no, we have to defeat Hillary Clinton, so I'm not retracting my support for Donald Trump. I have more in common with Trump than I do in Clinton. And this is just what's driving Republican establishment, whatever's left of it, completely nuts. Because, look, Donald Trump is not their ideal candidate, to say the least. He's saying things that is very likely to alienate the demographic groups and voters that the Republicans desperately need. But he's their guy and they're stuck with him, barring some shocker in Cleveland.
Equally torturous watching Mitch McConnell being interviewed by Chuck Todd, being asked the same question, and Mitch just couldn't say those words. It was a racist comment. Hey, what's this fiction you're talking about, a united Republican Party or a united Democratic Party? Have parties been fractured like this since you've been at it?
Well, yes, they have. I mean, we have seen things of, certainly, I mean, you have to go back a bit, but Barry Goldwater, of course, in 1964, did not have a united Republican Party behind him. Nelson Rockefeller, Bill Scranton, governor of Pennsylvania, George Romney, others, Hugh Scott, they were not Barry Goldwater supporters and fans in 1964. In 1972, George McGovern battled the Democratic establishment and won the nomination over the likes of Mayor Daley and Hubert Humphrey and everybody else in the establishment. We should point out, Goldwater and McGovern got creamed in November of those years. But I've never seen one. We've never seen an election with both major party presidential candidates with more unfavorables than favorables. It's just remarkable. Now, I don't know how that changes with Donald Trump, because Donald Trump said, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing and I'm not going to change. And of course, that's not what Republicans want to hear. There's still raw emotion between the Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton forces. Bernie Sanders is still talking about that the game is rigged. He's still saying that he can win over superdelegates. He still thinks that this will be a contested convention. That may be the case, but, you know, this is June 7th and not November 7th. And so I think the Democratic Party has a much likelier opportunity to unite before the general election than the Republicans do.
Perhaps so, but how can Hillary's unfavorables change significantly? She's had decades to accumulate all the baggage that Trump and others invoke.
she has, and the polls show it, that there's an untrustworthy factor. There's a believability factor that strikes against her. She is not warm and cuddly before the media, whereas Donald Trump will have a press conference at the blink of an eye. Hillary Clinton has yet to have one in a long, long time. She does have those negatives, and that goes back to her tenure as First Lady in the 1990s. So, yes, she has a lot to overcome. The question is who the voters will dislike more. Is Hillary Clinton a scarier prospect of being president, or is Donald Trump more a horrifying prospect? So ultimately, it may be who the voters will be voting against in November.
It could also be a matter of just how angry is this electorate, meaning how much are they willing to roll the dice and go for true change? And that would certainly be Donald Trump, the first non-politician elected, I believe, since Dwight Eisenhower.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, Eisenhower, of course, never ran for office. He was general. He was the president of Columbia University, and Donald Trump is just the president of Donald Trump, Inc., and we've never seen anything like it. But unlike Eisenhower, unlike Wendell Willkie, unlike so many of the other non-politicians who have run for president, Donald Trump says things that are just basically designed to infuriate, I think. I mean, he knows what he's saying about the Mexican judge would be prejudiced, that he wouldn't get a fair shake from a Muslim judge, that women are ugly and reporters are sleaze. He knows the reaction he's going to get. That famous quote he had a few months ago when he said, look, I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue in Manhattan, and my numbers would still not go down. Now, that was the case when the electorate was Republicans and Republican voters. Let's see if that changes in November when you have Democrats and others into the mix.
And here you and I have been talking primarily about personalities, and that's what's dominated the campaigns. Who's talking about issues?
Well, they both are, in a sense. And in some way, the problem with Donald Trump is that one of the reasons conservatives, as well as Democrats, don't like Donald Trump is because there's no ideological certainty with him. He's come out with some issues that is a complete opposite of what he said a couple of years ago or a couple of minutes ago. That keeps changing. I mean, Hillary Clinton, of course, has long talked about a more aggressive foreign policy. She's talked about no-fly zones over Syria, which is far more conservative and almost more militaristic than Barack Obama. But of course, at the same time, she can't let her inner Hillary, the more centrist Hillary, come to the forefront while Bernie Sanders is still yapping at her heels. And of course, Bernie Sanders has come up with issues that nobody may have talked about income inequality, about raising the minimum wage to, you know, $15 an hour. The things he's talking about is perhaps where the Democratic Party is moving, but perhaps it's moving faster than Hillary Clinton would like. Let's not forget that as recently as 2008, and that seems like just a few minutes ago, but in 2008, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, the entire Democratic Party electorate was opposed to same-sex marriage. And Bernie Sanders, who's supported for a long time, said, look, there's no issue here. This is exactly the way it should be. And the Democratic Party may be kicking and screaming, but they've come along.
You know, one of the tenets of Poli-Sci 101 is that as it gets closer to Election Day, you tend to move toward the middle. But we see seemingly the opposite. Bernie Sanders is the tail that's wagging the Democratic dog, and Donald Trump is, well, Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I think, I mean, that was the old famous Richard Nixon quote that as a Republican, you run to the right in the primaries and then you move to the center in the general election. Mitt Romney tried to do that in 2012, but it was just so patently transparent that it just didn't work. But Hillary Clinton is basically that candidate. She has liberal positions on many issues, but I think she's inherently a centrist candidate. Bernie Sanders won't let her move too far to the right. And of course, God knows what Donald Trump is going to do, because his positions on issues, I mean, he wants to bomb the crap out of ISIS, but at the same time, he's a good friend of Putin and the leaders of North Korea. And it's just remarkable where he's coming from, and we'll see how the voters react. But right now, my head is spinning.
The polls are open for several more hours in California, and yet we do know that Hillary Clinton has crossed that magic 2383 delegate count. If Bernie were to prevail this evening, what might you guess the thrilla in Philly would look like?
Well, boy, that's the great unknown. I mean, remember, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama went to the very end in 2008. But once the primaries were over, and I think the next day, Hillary Clinton said, "I lost." And remember, Clinton and Obama had that famous meeting in Unity, New Hampshire, to show their alliance. But Bernie Sanders, look, Bernie Sanders is, look, he's an independent. He's always been independent. He's, look at the number of Democrats in the Senate who've endorsed him. I think it's just one, Jeff Merkley of Oregon. It's because he does it his own way. He follows his own tune. And so if he wins California, well, then, of course, he'll insist that he'll once again try to make the case to the superdelegates that he will do much better against Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton would. And he's going to say, look, as far as I know, right now, she has not gotten over 2383, because that number includes the superdelegates who will cast their ballots at the convention, and they're not bound by anything. So his hope is to woo them over, but at the same time, make definite changes in the platform. I mean, he doesn't like the fact that the superdelegates have all this power. We noticed the other day that Elizabeth Warren, who is a superdelegate, agreed. She said, look, I think they do have too much power. And he also feels that, you know, more of the Democratic primary should be open to independent voters. So whether he wins the nomination or not, whether he woos over the superdelegates or not, he still has a lot to say about the future of the Democratic Party, and he's going to make it clear that he's going to battle all the way to Philadelphia.
Hey, Ken, if past is prologue, all she really needs to do is make him Secretary of State.
Right. We did see that once before, didn't we?
We did. Thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Dave, thank you.